Blog Talk Radio.
Latest U.S. Led lobbying effort in the U.N. demonstrates clearly is that the state of Israel, shielded by its chief backers, the United States, Great Britain, and France, maintain its own set of rules outside of international laws and norms.
One might ask the question, does Israel plan to use its rules or any other countries? Oh, to use its nukes or any other countries? If not, why does it need to maintain them and in secret? Along with the U.S., Israel has already threatened to attack Iran on the basis that Iran might one day build a nuclear weapon. Both the U.S. and Israel say this would be a preemptive strike, just in case Iran might attack Israel at some point in the future, even though Iran, unlike Israel, has no history of aggression against any of its regional neighbors. In fact, the state of Israel was found upon unwarranted aggression, terrorist bombings, and ethnic cleansing programs targeting native Palestinian Arabs who previously lived within its ever-expanding borders.
Okay.
This is the definition of a triple standard.
Okay. Of the 94 countries that voted on the resolution to force Israel to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, 51 voted against the proposal. Interestingly, all the Middle Eastern states were in favor of Israel joining, with the United States, Britain, and European nations forming the majority that voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a statement just to show
ridiculous.
The 52 seconds here for the vote.
And in another vote, the member states rejected a draft resolution calling on Israel to join the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Arab states submitted the resolution, which called on Israel to join the treaty and accept IAEA inspectors at all of its nuclear facilities. 43 countries, mainly those in the Middle East, voted in favor of the resolution, but 51 states, including Japan, the United States, and European countries, voted against the proposal. Israel is widely believed to have possessed nuclear weapons since the late 1960s, making it the only country to do so in the Middle East. It has neither denied nor admitted a nuclear arsenal and has refused to join the NPT.
It's so amazing how they can get away with this, you
mm-hmm.
know, and for us to be so, I don't even know.
Why aren't they calling for an invasion of Israel?
Yeah, that's what they should be doing. You know, it's not.
Yeah, but any other country sneezes and they're lining up on their borders.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one I wanted to read tonight. It was on Island Core. Did you read that?
Yeah, but it's not worth it.
You didn't think so?
No. It's not, a lot of it isn't really accurate or true.
Is it?
No.
Okay. I'll take your word for it, since you are the education expert here. But I thought that it was might be more real than non-real. Okay. Hang on, folks. Do. Okay. Anybody out there who's taking statins?
Those are for cholesterol.
Well, yeah. They claim it's the greatest medical fraud of all time, the study reports.
It doesn't do anything to help you.
No. Statins are one of the most dangerous drugs prescribed by doctors. The risks from them were obvious before they were ever marketed. Nonetheless, they are among the best-selling drugs of all time. Finally, genuine science has been looking at their adverse effects and lack of benefit to document the truth that was obvious from the beginning. Statins are the greatest medical fraud ever perpetrated. A new review of the science reports. The statin industry, with all of its spin-offs, is a $20 billion a year industry. We are observing the revealing of the utmost medical tragedy of all times. It is unprecedented that the healthcare industry has inadvertently induced life-threatening nutrient deficiency in millions of otherwise healthy people. And I'm going to continue reading this. It's kind of scary article, really, that people are, so much of our medicine is such fraud, you know, such fraud. And it takes 10 years and this class action suits and everything else, you know, after hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have died.
Yeah.
You know? And,
basically.
Yeah. And it says authors of the only point on which I can disagree is the statement with the state is the statement that the travesty of statins was somehow inadvertent. There is, in fact, absolutely no excuse for it. Authors of the study, Sharif Sultan and Mayim Hines, have produced a paper that is utterly condemnatory of the use of statins. Not only do they condemn the drugs, they also condemn the pseudoscience behind it. Though they don't stand it, and obviously could not take such a risk, there is simply no way around the fact that science behind statins has been largely fraudulent, okay, and that fraud has been perpetrated by Big Pharma. And so what did the study actually say? Well, it says Steins and Hines, Sultan and Hines reviewed a large number of studies using PubMed, M-based, and Cochrane review databases to find them. It goes on a little more technical and all that. But
The thing is, you should jump to the end of this. It tells you what it does.
Yeah, I just wanted to say what. But cholesterol is, you know, it's, we haven't, when you jump me like that, it's not a good thing. We often refer to it as the medical industry, okay? Inhibitors are statin. Reductase inhibitors are statins. Their function is to interfere with HMG-CoA, which is a molecule that's a precursor for cholesterol. Of course, the purpose of statin is to reduce cholesterol, which they do accomplish. So what's the problem, as the author states? Cholesterol is crucial for energy, immunity, fat, metabolism, leptin, thyroid hormone activity, liver-related synthesis, stress intolerance, adrenal function, sex hormone, and synthesis and brain function. So why do we have a problem with cholesterol?
Well, this
cholesterol
is
a primary requirement for an enormous array of absolutely critical functions in the body. Obviously, if cholesterol is reduced, then health must be harmed.
That's right. Energy levels must be reduced. There must be interference with fat metabolism. Thyroid must not be able to function properly. Our ability to deal with stress is stressed. The adrenal glands functions must be damaged. Sexual function and reproductive ability must suffer. Our brain must be damaged, which can mean any part of our existence may be harmed, including mental functioning, autonomic processes, coordination, and every other function, including the heart. There is simply no excuse for not recognizing that not only is there an obvious risk inherent in statins, but it would be stunning if they didn't produce harm.
The benefits of statins?
None.
In terms of benefit, the author noted that only people who are helped at all are middle-aged men who have already suffered heart attacks. And that benefit is minimal. In fact, the authors point out that statins produce less benefit for these men than aspirin. Oh, my God. And please note that Gaia Health does not support aspirin as a treatment for heart disease either. In effect, statins produce not one whit of benefit to anyone in any manner. The adverse effects of statins. The authors found that for every 10,000 individuals in good health who take statins, 307 extra patients suffer from cataracts. 23 additional patients develop acute kidney failure. 74 extra patients develop liver dysfunction. And statins increase muscle fatigue by 30% and cause an 11.3% incident of rhabdomyolysis. I don't know what that is. Rhabdomyolysis?
Myolysis.
That is.
I don't know.
At high doses. They also state, what's more, it induces inflammatory myopathy, including necrotizing, autoimmune myopathy, and immunosuppression, and the statin-related myopathy can last for 12 months. Man, this stuff is deadly.
Also causes erectile dysfunction. I read the article.
Yeah.
There's a lot of side effects of it.
Yeah,
it's not a healthy, it's a bad drug. It causes many, many medical problems.
Oh, my God, look at this. According to FDA, adverse effects, about 40% of every 10,000 statin drugs for interstitial lung disease. which causes scarring in the lungs, which is almost never reversible. Statins cause hyperglycemia after eating in both diabetics and non-diabetics. Statins induce both full-blown type 2 diabetes in women. Statins increase the risk of developing HbA1c in people with and without diabetes. It's a common condition that
causes glucose to stick to hemoglobin, which is an indicator of greater harm from diabetes. Statins prescribed to the elderly cause a 9% increase in diabetes. Statins can cause insulin resistance. A correlation between Parkinson's disease and low cholesterol exists, which clearly implicates statins. A correlation between statins and early onset cataracts has been found. Statin users may be 50% more likely to develop cataracts early.
Wow. Here are the most shocking health risks of statin. Statin use is associated with the increased prevalence and extent of coronary plaque calcification.
Ironically, for a drug which was marketed to lower the risk of cardiovascular disease, the CONFIRM registry identified a strong association of statin use to the progression of coronary artery plaque features.
This isn't simply irony. Statins increase the harm that they are supposedly meant to decrease. In relation to the particular heart risk, the authors also found that statin use has correlated with a greater incidence of severe coronary artery stenosis, as well as increase in the numbers of coronary vessels developing obstructive coronary artery disease. Furthermore, statin use was linked to an increase in the prevalence and extent of mixed calcific plaque. Five prospective studies have borne witness to the fact that statin therapy does not induce any coronary calcium regression, and evolution of coronary calcium continues regardless of statin treatment. And that is, statins increase the narrowing of coronary arteries, man, oh man, which can only increase the chance of heart attacks. They increase the development of obstructive coronary artery disease, and statins may increase calcium-related arterial plaque. Statins also produce a significant increase in the risk of cancer and neurodegenerative dysfunction in the elderly. The authors point out even more than this, but just how much more do you need to know? Statins are health destroyers. Holy crap.
I know, I read the article.
And intentionally hiding the facts. The study points out that statins may increase the risk of non-melanoma skin cancers by 1.6 times, the authors then state, for unknown reasons, since these publications, the squamous cell carcinoma has been excluded in all reports from subsequent statin trials. Is there any way to interpret that other than that the statin industry does not want there to be more evidence that statins cause skin cancer? The authors referenced studies that had claimed to demonstrate benefits from statin. However, when they were reanalyzed by independent scientists, and scientists who generally did have ties to Big Pharma, who didn't have ties to Big Pharma, they found that the claims results were false. The studies actually showed that statins produce no benefits and great deal of harm. Oh, my God. This goes on quite a ways, but it keeps going into the fraud that's involved with this.
Mm.
And the health agencies, the agencies that are supposed to protect us from harmful health products, as the FDA, the CDC, and the NIH, have all been complicit in the promotion of statins. Even now, the CDC strongly recommends the use of statins. The FDA does nothing more than add warnings to the package inserts of statin, an utterly meaningless endeavor that has never been shown to have any significant effect on sales of drugs. The NIH states statins are relatively safe for most people. It's obvious that our health agencies are acting almost exclusively as marketing agents for Big Pharma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the last culprit of the thing, I'll tell you, because it's the greatest medical fraud of all time. But doctors, last but certainly not least, are the doctors who prescribe statins. They tend to argue that it's not their fault, that they can only go by the studies. But the reality is that that it's their job to stand between their patients and dangerous drugs. If they are unable to or unwilling to do their jobs, which is clearly the case for any of them who prescribe statins, without informing their patients of the risks, and also complete lack of benefit, then they have are no different than those who produce pseudoscience, junk science, or outright fraudulent science to support these poisons. At a minimum, they are guilty of failing in their duties to their patients. They may also be guilty of negligent homicide for any patient who dies as a risk of their lack of diligence. And the greatest medical fraud of all time? Statins are the greatest medical fraud of all time. It had to be known from the very beginning that they would likely produce a great deal of harm. As the authors point out, statins interfere with the production of cholesterol, thus producing deficits in metabolic functions that are necessary for life. There is, therefore, no excuse for doctors not to know. There is no excuse for the news media not to do research and would have shown them the fraud being perpetrated. There is no excuse for the health agencies that approve statins or the ones that promote them, and they have to have the relevant information. And finally, there's no excuse for doctors because they should have known. If they didn't, then they were derelict in their duty. Everyone involved in the development, marketing, approval, promotion, and prescription of statins is guilty of perpetrating the greatest medical fraud of all time. Tallying up the death toll is most likely impossible, but there can be little doubt that the numbers run into multiple millions. Holy crap. And, you know, this is really scary to death. You can catch this article on WakingTimes.com. Okay? My God. Isn't that the scariest thing?
It is.
That is really freaky scary. You know? Let's see if I can... That's scary to death. Scary to death. Do you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, we depend on these things, these damn doctors and, you know, people who do stuff like this. This is such a great article. I meant to share it today, and I didn't get a chance to. I try to share everything of importance like this on my Facebook account, so my readers can, so my friends, if you will, can get a chance to see all this. But there's a lot of people who won't get just that stuff.
They don't know what to ask for, you know?
No, I mean, where do you look, you know? You didn't like this article, huh?
No, it's not really very good.
Okay. You want us to go to the World War III project? Did you look into that?
I don't. How long is it?
13 minutes.
No, I didn't play that. That might be interesting, though.
Yeah. And,
that might be very interesting.
Okay, we'll play that.
I played that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
Yeah, I think we'll play this one. It's short, but does anybody remember John McCain? Okay, everybody knows John McCain, right? But why do these scandals of his and all this stuff that everybody knows about and is common knowledge, he's like Teflon.
Uh-huh.
Right, it just falls off of him, and nobody cares. And people still people still vote for him, and I think he's a wonderful human being, and he's nothing more than a warmongering prick. Right? So let's.
I created an appearance of impropriety by attending a meeting with four other senators with four regulators.
Charles Keating, a millionaire banker who has come to embody the savings and loan scandal, was let off in handcuffs today.
Hearings begin this week into what has already been called a major congressional scandal. It involves the $500 billion savings and loan bailout. It is about charges that five U.S. senators tried to protect one SNL owner who had contributed to their political campaigns.
Never before have five senators been accused of intervening with federal regulators to help a campaign contributor. Keating and his associates gave a total of $1.4 million to the senators. The senators then pressured former regulator Edwin Gray to go easy on Keating. Keating has become a symbol of the worst financial scandal in U.S. history and the worst ethics scandal in the history of the Senate.
He was also a high-powered McCain constituent and friend.
It was a very, very close personal relationship. Family spent a lot of time together. They traveled so often together with the Keating family, flying to their place in the Bahamas.
There were direct business ties as well. Cindy McCain had a major stake in a Keating real estate development. William Black was one of the lead investigators at the meeting.
Senator McCain was unique among the five senators in having a direct financial conflict of interest involving direct investment.
Former regulator Black is unforgiving.
On judgment, ethics, and truthfulness, he failed this test as badly as you can fail.
But the only thing where this fails is that, you know, they don't explain why he was allowed to ride on this thing, you know? You know what I mean? That makes sense?
Yeah, it does.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I was just thinking whether I could talk or not.
You don't want to talk?
Well, I so far I'm okay.
You lost your voice there, so.
It's all right. I just have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because all of a sudden, then I don't have any.
Okay. You don't.
I can read a small one.
Yeah, I just wanted to.
There's another. There's a very.
I love this one. Putin tells McCain to fuck off, you war criminal.
Like your friend, U.S. Senator John McCain has said on Twitter that you could follow the fate of Muammar Gaddafi. Do you think it's an idle threat or a real plan by the West? Well, calling him a friend is probably an exaggeration. Although I have met Mr. McCain, I think it was at that memorable Munich security conference 4 years ago. Yes, I've seen that statement. What can I say? First, his words weren't meant for me, but for all of Russia. Some countries would want Russia to step aside, to get out of the way, and stop interfering in the ruling of the world. They're still afraid of our nuclear potential. That's why Russia is always in the spotlight. That's why it's a pain in the neck for many. We have an independent foreign policy, and I hope it stays this way in the future. Of course, that's not very convenient for some people. Second, the West is not monolithic, and we do have more friends than enemies. Third, Mr. McCain is known to have fought in Vietnam. I believe he has enough civilian blood on his hands. Is it that he can't live without such horrible, disgusting sights as the butchering of Gaddafi? The whole world saw him being killed, all bloodied. Is that democracy? And who did it? Drones, including American ones, delivered a strike on his motorcade. Then commandos, who were not supposed to be there, brought in so-called opposition and militants and killed him without trial. I'm not saying that Gaddafi didn't have to quit, but that should have been left up to the people of Libya to decide through the democratic process. It's a long and difficult way, but it's the only way to do it right. Mr. McCain was taken prisoner in Vietnam and was put not just in jail, but in a pit. He sat there for several years. Anyone would go nuts after that.
McCain's. I wish I could. I have it actually somewhere. Let me just see if I have this. You know what I'm going to do? Let's go for a quick music break, and we'll be right back.
There's two more good audios on there.
Yeah. I want to read McCain's letter to Putin.
back, but Leo is still looking for audio that he can't find.
Okay. Here we go. What I wanted to do first is... McCain wrote this ridiculous letter after... I should actually read Putin's op-ed in the New York Times.
I think most people have read that.
But I don't know if people have read McCain's stupid statement that he wrote to.
Well, the media talked all about Putin's letter, but never mentioned.
Yeah, because it was so stupid, and it was such a joke, you know. Let me see if I can find it here. You know, I kept believing I had done these things, but I didn't. I thought I had bookmarked all of these things because it was.
What are you trying to find,
Leo? I'm trying to find the actual
Let's
thing.
Let's move
I,
on
and,
if you can't find it.
I want to know why people haven't placed it up there.
Or you want to play a little more music because we just have Dadia right now.
Well, we're kind of filling in here with...
Leo's having trouble finding it.
Yeah, no, it's coming up, but for some reason, it's maybe censored by Google. Looks like it is.
Huh.
Yeah, Google, you know, Google censors a lot of stuff. And, see if I can get it from not Google, maybe I can get it from Oh, Lord. You know, folks, I get really angry about this stuff because it's so fixed and so hoaxed, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The way that the system is so set, just to that, God. Are you? It would be interesting to be able to get this thing properly up there, but are you English? Not quite worth it, folks. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Oh. All right. Open letter to John McCain. Folks, I've almost got it here. They just don't let you see this stuff. Whatever makes the U.S. look bad, you know what I mean? John McCain made himself look like a complete idiot, you know, on this. And, you know, it lasted for a little while, and then it went away. It took it off the line. It was all over the place for about a day or two. But anyway, let's get out of here. Sorry, folks, that this that I had to do this. I'm gonna just play another quick tune, and then we can. After or later, a group of active firefighters gathered to demonstrate their displeasure with the state of affairs facing the people of this majority African-American municipality.
Retired Detroit Department of Health chemist Walter Now, a member of the Stop the Theft of Our Pension Committee, told the Free Press in front of the courthouse that what the banks and their operatives are attempting in the city could set a pattern for the rest of the United States. I don't see how anyone could take pensions away from a whole generation of people who've worked hard for that city, Now said.
Testimony illustrates broad opposition to bankers' rule.
Gene Voortkamp, a lifelong Detroiter and recent mayoral candidate, in the 2013 primary election, broke out in tears as she expressed her opposition to what she considered an illegal bankruptcy filing by Orrin Snyder. She said, if this bankruptcy and the goal of pension cutting are allowed, it will impoverish my parents, sister, friends, and neighbors. Many seniors say that cutting health care and their meager incomes is a way to cut the senior population. Voortkamp continued stressing, if the undemocratic EM, whom I did not elect, is going to break union contracts and pensions, then he should also break the contracts Detroit has with financial institutions. Our assets are not for sale. It is not either the art or the pensions. It is neither.
Pointing the finger at the banks and their role in the financial ruin of Detroit, she asked, why haven't we sued for the LIBOR rigging, collecting unpaid taxes for the wealthy and fines from blight and environmental violations? Detroit needs to protect our assets and get the forensic audits we have needed for decades of all debts, authorities, and the work the state in Jones Day has done here. Voortkamp surmised before Judge Rhodes that I suspect there is a small group of racist rich men and banks who have been pulling the puppet strings of Detroit for a very long time. And I stand in bankruptcy court. I would say they haven't done a good job. And Detroiters need to stop blaming themselves and stop listening to this local media that is controlled by these rich men and banks. Later, Michael Shanks, a resident of Northwest Side of Detroit, told the bankruptcy court of the impact of predatory lending carried out by the banks had contributed to the economic crisis of the city. He described the practices of the banks as illegal and racist and in its overall character. And the financial crisis in Detroit has triggered by the housing crisis, where an estimated 100,000 homes foreclosures occurred and almost 250,000 people left the city. The banks issued predatory loans targeting Detroit and other communities of color in a racist and illegal manner. Shane then emphasized that the banks have been fined tens of billions of dollars, and former bank employees are testifying under oath confirming the illegal and racist practices of the banks. And some of the testimonies include racially offensive language that cannot be repeated in a polite company.
Ooh.
These banks include many of the same banks who hold Detroit's debt, and that property and income tax dropped precipitously during this crisis and causing huge losses to the city of Detroit. And to make matters even worse, the banks refused to pay property taxes on homes seized after foreclosure. And another...
They just refuse, and then they don't have to?
That's right. And another objective to the bankruptcy filing was Cynthia Blair, the widow of a Detroit police officer. Blair has been active in attempts to mobilize retirees and their families against the programs of cuts and austerity being imposed by Orrin Snyder. Blair said the bankruptcy could take me and my daughter's pension away, and we would be thrown directly to the welfare rolls. And according to the figures released by the emergency manager, Detroit has over $22 billion in long-term debt. These purported debts are to the banks, bondholders, and issuers who have played the most significant role in the decline of the city. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could just do like Iceland did and said, up yours, we're not paying you, come and get it, right? But no.
Well, basically, that's what the banks do to the people.
That's exactly what they do to the people. So why do people say, screw you, we're not going to pay you?
In mass,
yeah. All the people left in Detroit to say, up yours. Or is attempting to cut a deal with the banks and bond issuers where they will be paid 80% of what they say is owed to them by Detroit, while pensioners and workers are being chained with massive obligations that derive directly from financial practices dictated by Wall Street and the corporations, many of whom are based in the metropolitan area. The automobile firms of General Motors and Chrysler were bailed out in 2009 by the federal government, and nonetheless, the prepackaged bankruptcy and restructuring resulted in the loss of tens of thousands of jobs in small businesses, such as car dealerships, which employed skilled and often ununion workers. People in Detroit are saying that the municipality is not a private corporation, and that people have a vested interest in maintaining their jobs, salaries, health benefits, and pensions and city assets. Many more people are agreeing with the slogans and program advanced by the Moratorium Now coalition, calling for the cancellation of the bank debt and the holding of the financial institution and corporations accountable for the damage they have done to the cities. Oh, man, this is so right. And further confirming the widespread anger over the attempts by Orr and Snyder on behalf of the banks to impose unbearable austerity on the city, a study conducted by the Detroit Free Press and WXYZ Channel 7 revealed that 75% of likely voters said they were against any cuts to municipal pensions. In addition, 78% also responded that they also opposed the selling off of the works of the Detroit Arts Institute to pay the bankers. Nonetheless, this opposition must be organized if it is to be effective. In fact, the entire emergency management process has been rejected by a majority of people around the state of Michigan in a referendum just last November.
However, Snyder and his cohorts in the state legislature in December 2012 passed another law that reinstituted the pseudo-legal rationale for a municipal dictatorship and austerity. Even the bankruptcy filing procedure was conducted illegally, says Crystal Crittenden, the former corporation counsel of the City of Detroit Law Department. Crittenden, who was later removed from her position as head of the Law Department for opposing emergency management, but still works within it, noted that an actual bankruptcy must be filed by elected officials of a municipality. Consequently, the agents of banks in Lansing working through Kevin Orr violated even the state constitution in carrying out this attempt to further drive the city and its people into deeper poverty and oppression. The International People Assembly Against Banks and Austerity is being organized by the Moratorium Now Coalition and other community organizations in Detroit and surrounding areas. Excuse me. Over 280 endorsements for the gathering on October 5th and 6th at Grand Circus Park downtown have come in so far.
The two-day-long event will feature people from the city, the nation, and indeed the world. Statements of solidarity have been issued from people's organizations in Brazil, Portugal, and other states facing similar crises. The International People's Assembly will also be designed to build for a massive mobilization on October 23rd, when Judge Rhodes hears arguments on the constitutionality of the bankruptcy filing. Members of the coalition putting together the assembly say that people should surround the courthouse on the 23rd of October, calling for the end of bankruptcy and the cancellation of bank debt. Organizations for the International People's Assembly are encouraging all those concerned to join the effort in solidarity with the City of Detroit. Those interested in finding out more about the historic gathering should log on to moratorium-mi.org. Okay?
And just to be clear, on October 23rd, they're calling for the end of bankruptcy and the end of the cancellation of bank debt.
That's right, yeah.
The way it was written, it didn't make that particularly clear.
No, but it's a damn good thing. You know?
Yeah, that's
really
terrible.
I mean, that's what they should do. I mean, jeepers, creepers, man, you know.
The bankers run the world.
Yeah, and it's like...
and they have all the money and they continue to steal it. Oh, there's something. AFL shrugs off Detroit bankruptcy.
AFL-CIO shrugs off Detroit bankruptcy. That's sick.
Oh, that really upsets me to think they've done that.
I had to talk to our friend tomorrow. Oh, tomorrow night we have Larry Dorman joining us, and I'll bring this up tomorrow night.
This is by Patrick Martin of Global Research. The AFL has saved that. AFL-CIO has responded to the bankruptcy of the city of Detroit with a predictable combination of rhetorical appeals to the Obama administration and a refusal to lift a finger to actually defend the interests of the working class.
The union bureaucrats enjoying six-figure salaries and guaranteed the lavish pensions are separated by a vast social distance from the city employees and residents of Detroit. They could scarcely disguise their indifference to the social counter-revolution being inflicted on the workers who are compelled to pay dues to these pro-corporate organizations.
A statement issued, this is really an indictment
here.
A statement issued by the AFL-CIO Executive Council, which met last week in Washington, D.C., condemned the bankruptcy filing by the city while declaring, "The AFL-CIO will continue to support our City of Detroit active and retired members in their fight to maintain dignity on the job, a safe workplace, fair wages, and benefits for their labor, and against constant pensions they have paid for and earned. We call on President Obama, Congress, and the leadership of Michigan to stand with us and with the people of Detroit." The statement concludes with a call for President Obama and Congress to commit an immediate infusion of federal assistance for Detroit and to demand that the federal financial commitment be matched by the state of Michigan.
As the union officials are well aware, such an appeal is an empty and cynical gesture. Obama, Congress, and the political leadership of Michigan are all agreed on using the bankruptcy courts to rob workers, first in Detroit and then in other cities, of their pensions and health benefits. Obama's Treasury Secretary, Jacob Lew, flatly rejected any bailout of Detroit when asked on several network television programs broadcast on it. Now, the bastards were willing to bail out General Motors,
yeah,
right? But the goddamn major city that General Motors was in, they can go to hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and a million people. Yeah, I mean, it just like so sick. It makes you so sick.
Really does.
Yeah. Well, the AFL-CIO, the issues that Detroit has in terms of problems with its creditors, it's going to have to work out in its credit with its creditors. Lew said on CNN, repeating the same remark in almost the same words, clearly scripted in advance in several other programs. But you see, these guys, Obama owes his ass to the banking system, all right?
And to the unions.
But he could give a shit about the unions, okay? Well, the AFL-CIO at the national level issues perfunctory statements designed to cover its own treachery and the anti-working class character of Obama administration and the Democratic Party in Michigan and Detroit. Its affiliated unions instructed their members to remain on the job and do nothing to fight the bankruptcy. AFL-CIO and city union officials have repeatedly complained that they helped impose cuts in jobs, wages, and benefits on city workers, but are nevertheless being frozen out of the city's restructuring by Orr and Republican Governor Rick Snyder. The AFL-CIO statement notes that Detroit emergency manager Kevin Orr was a bankruptcy attorney for the Jones Day law firm, which currently represents Peabody Coal in bankruptcy proceedings. The largest U.S. coal mining company is seeking to strip retired miners of their pensions and health care benefits using a shell company, Patriot Coal.
How nice that they gave it such a nice name.
Now, the guy that they assigned to destroying
Detroit
is their damn attorney, right? But the statement is silent on an even more significant connection between Orr and attacks on the working class. Nowhere does the AFL-CIO acknowledge that Orr himself is a Democrat who worked closely with the Obama administration during the Chrysler bankruptcy when the unions agreed to cut the wages of newly hired workers by 50%, as well as slashing pensions and health benefits. The silence on the role of the Democratic Party demonstrates the essential political function of the AFL-CIO, which serves both as an industrial police force for big business within the workplace and a political police force maintaining the domination of the Democratic Party and the corporate-controlled two-party system. And I went after Lila. We were talking about this the other day, last week, and we've been talking about it. You know, the Democratic Party is such a shill of a party, right?
I don't disagree with that.
And the unions are up their butts, okay? And they, you know, the unions are getting screwed over and screwed over the union people.
The union executives are
getting perks and happy days, you know, for being members of this Democratic Party, all right? But it's like they get nothing. The people are getting screwed, glued, and tattooed. And you can see this. And people are dropping out of unions. They're dropping, voluntarily getting rid of, dropping their ties with unions because they're seeing the corruption involved with it. It's really a sad situation because unions are an important aspect, but they're killing themselves through their own, you know.
Duplicity,
yeah. And over the past 35 years, the unions have been transformed from defensive organizations of working class, albeit in the grips of a right-wing bureaucracy, into corporatist organizations that serve only the interests of the privileged stratum of the upper middle class that controls them. Oh, man, is this guy right on the money. The moribund character of the official labor movement is shown most starkly in the AFL-CIO's own membership figures. The percentage of workers in unions dropped in 2012 by the largest amount in 6 years, from 11.8% to 11.3%. And the average age of union membership has risen from 38 to 45 over the past quarter century. As workers in Detroit and other cities begin to wage battles against the attacks on their jobs, wage, pensions, and other benefits, they find in the AFL-CIO an implacable enemy. The first step in carrying out a successful struggle is a complete break with these reactionary organizations and the building of new fighting organizations of the working class. Man, is that so real or what? That is just so damn real. You know, so real. So real. It's like, wow. It's like too much. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, you know.
That's really disappointing when you read something like that.
Yeah, I hope you can do that.